I want to go ahead and turn to Luke chapter 6. That's where we're at this morning. We're going to finish chapter 6. So, and we'll get into chapter 7 today as well. So we are finishing the rest of the Sermon on the Plain. And we got down to verse 38 on Wednesday. And so we'll continue on in verse 39 today. But before we get started, let's start with a word of prayer. Our Father in heaven, we're thankful for the day. We're thankful for the night's rest and the time to come here to look into your word. We're thankful for your words through Luke, and we're thankful for all that you bless us with. Help us to be challenged by the words of Jesus and to put them into our lives. In your Son's precious name, amen. So what we've been discussing is we've been talking about obviously, good news for the poor and what that looks like. And we've been talking about the concepts of, as well about a story. Let me turn this on real quick. That's needing to be completed. And so we have all of these different elements. And so now we've come to the Sermon on the Plain. And what was kind of the main takeaway for you on the Sermon on the Plain? Based off of Wednesday night's discussion.
Jesus' teaching is much different than the natural way we think about things or that the world thinks about things.
Right.
It's kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
To what we learn in the world.
Yeah. So that's a really good way to summarize it, because that's how Luke is picturing Jesus, is that all the things that we might assume he's going to do, he doesn't do that, he does something different. And when we get into Luke chapter 7, remember John sends the messengers to Jesus saying, "Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?" And then he actually quotes back to his statement in Luke 4, and what he's pointing out is, this is exactly what I was supposed to be doing. This is what the kingdom of God looks like. It's just, you know, sometimes we bring biases, we bring assumptions to ideas, and we have to be very careful about that. But what Jesus is coming to do is coming to change the values that our culture and the world puts on us and to replace them with the values that come from God. And so we've been going through and highlighting again that he's fulfilling a story, and that he's also going to address skeptics. We're going to talk a little bit about how to deal with some of that in chapter 7 a little bit. And then also a gospel for the poor. So we've been highlighting those three concepts. And so let's pick up here in verse 39. And let's read verse 39. Let's read through the end of the chapter to catch the whole flow of thought. So let's read 39 down through 49.
Broke against it, immediately
Okay, so in this section, how would you kind of summarize Jesus' point? What is he trying to highlight or emphasize? Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, so this is a pretty big turn in the sermon. He's pretty much laid out the expectation that he has, and now he's going to kind of transition to either correcting our misconceptions or judging our faithfulness and that kind of balance. What else would you say about it? Sure. Yeah. Which, you know, based off of what he said, there's a lot to clean up already with the first section of loving our enemies and the woes and the blessings that we've discussed already. So let's start talking about this first section here in verses 39 and 40. I want us to discuss 39 and 40 because it might seem like it's a little out of place, but I don't think it is. Jesus said it for a reason. So he now tells them a parable and says, can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? Okay. What's the parable? What's the point of the parable?
Obedience to him.
Okay. All right. Obedience to him.
You've got to be taught. You've got to know your directives and follow them.
Sure. Yeah, that's good. What else do we want to add? Okay, yeah. So, one, if you have a blind person leading a blind person, they're going to both fall into the ditch. So you need to have somebody that can actually see, right? So you basically got two points here. You need to follow the one that can actually see, and don't follow the person that's blind. All right. So that's kind of the summary here. And so here in verse 40, what's his point then in verse 40? Okay, so how does that relate then? How do these two concepts relate to what Jesus has said already and what he's going to say after? Right. Yeah, so how would you connect this to what he's already said? I appreciate Wes's comment there. What have we analyzed already that might be compared to the blind man in Jesus' sermon so far? Yeah, so somebody that thinks they're all right, so just look here, verses 32 through 36. What was the standard then that they were basically like applying to themselves? What's the person that these people were comparing themselves to, or Jesus compares them to? Right, and Kayla mentioned very quietly, but she said what I was thinking is the sinners. He said, even sinners, three times. That's the comparison, and the whole problem is if that's your standard that you're trying to follow to kind of mimic, it's not going to work. You already got a blind leader. You're just going to end up in the same spot that they were at. Ed, did you have a comment? Go ahead.
Themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding.
Yeah, so let's jump just a little bit farther in the story for just a second. Turn to chapter 12 for just a moment. Let's talk about the Pharisees for a minute, because it will directly relate back to this blindness. Because as you look at the blindness that Jesus is talking about, the blindness isn't something that can't be healed. It's because there's this huge beam in your eye and you can't see. And so we look at that and we wonder, what could the beam be? Well, he mentions that it's hypocrisy. And one of the things that is such a problem with the Pharisees is it was their hypocrisy. And so you see in chapter 12 here in verse 1, he says, "In the meantime, when so many thousands of people had gathered together that they were trampling one another, he began to say to his disciples first, 'Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees,'" which is hypocrisy. That was the issue behind all of it, really. Whether it was the love of money, or whether it was the devouring widows' houses, or the prejudice against Jesus, all of it was hypocrisy. Is that they were putting on a face. It looked okay on the surface, but their hearts were far, far away from God. And so what he is dealing with in Luke chapter 6 is getting that out of the way. As we talked about already on Wednesday, Kelly and I have talked a little bit about it, is Jesus is in the process of revealing hearts here. And he's making sure among those that are listening to him, your heart has to be right. And you can't just have this big beam in your eye and not address your own problems, as well as then try to lead people in that state, which is what's happening with the Pharisees. So let's go back here now to Luke 6, and let's look at 41 through 42 as it relates and kind of has that kind of backstory and discussion. So in 41 and 42, what's kind of the point, and how does that relate to what we've been talking about? Right.
And that's apparently what he's referring to in the Pharisees is their hypocrisy. They did the things that they should not have been doing, but still trying to correct other people and lead them.
Yeah, and we've seen that already, that's some of the people that are trying to critique Jesus, and they have so many issues before they even try to bring any type of discussion or accusation against him. So, what else? What should we do? What should we do with this text? Because a lot of times when we come to this text, I think we can make mistakes on both sides. And so the first primary, I guess, kind of the low-hanging fruit here is what Tom has already said. If you've got a huge issue, don't go through and say anything to anybody else, right? And so we understand that point. Go ahead.
I think part of the point is also, though, it's not saying don't ever address other people. It's saying get the log out of your own eye.
Right.
We've got to humble ourselves and examine ourselves. And you know, it's like some of the verses that say, let there not be hypocrisy among you. I mean, we've got to watch that. We've got to always stay on guard with that, because we need to be in the business.
So that's where I was going, Joel.
Well, I can't go to them and talk to them. No, get yourself right before you do it. Make sure you're set right.
Well, and all that is it's taking a verse out of context and not appreciating the rest of what Jesus said. Because his point was to remove the beam, right? He asked the question, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eyes, is the point. When you don't see the log in your own eye. But look at what he said. He said, you hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take out the speck that is in your brother's eye. So, I mean, just imagine the situation that he's talking about. Obviously, he's using hyperbole. If you had this big beam, there'd be a problem. But if you have a speck in your eye and you can't get it out, do you need help? So what people do is they go to this text and they abuse it in two different ways. One, they'll go through and say, you can't say anyone to anybody because we're all hypocrites. And then what other people will say is, in essence, hey, okay, well, it's both sides of it. You have a person that's, okay, we're all hypocrites, so don't say anything. And then you have other people that say, okay, yes, we're all hypocrites. I don't want to try to help anybody else. I don't want to try to correct anybody else.
Or the person that's being corrected said, you're as bad as I am or worse. Why are you correcting me?
Right.
And so you have that problem. And I think the part that I get a lot out of is you will then see clearly take that speck out. Just because you have a problem, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be trying to help somebody else who has a similar problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, one of the things that I want us to talk about as it relates to this, what is the primary accusation that people make against religious people? Yeah, judgmental or hypocritical, right? And so Jesus talks about both of them right here. And it's right at the core of what it means to be a disciple is, yes, that has to be taken care of. And it's not just because you want to have influence in the world, even though that's true, is that the body of Christ is not subject to change and variation. It's not just subject to our own whims and our own standards. Is that it is about coming to the standard of Christ and being molded into His image and being shaped after our teacher. So how do we then do that? How do we do that in our local congregation, as well as how do we impact the world through that process? Go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, that's great. Go ahead. Sure. Yeah, yeah. So that's accurately coming to the solution and how we approach it. Go ahead. Thank you. Go ahead.
It's interesting to remember that Jesus said to Peter, when you return, feed my sheep. So there was the anticipation that he was going to repent, and then that was going to put him in position to be in service again, not mm-hmm. to mope and to withdraw, but to get back doing what he should do.
Sure. And what I want you to realize, all of those are great comments. One thing I want us to really be careful with is when we're trying to go out and trying to teach people that are in the world, we have to be super, super careful about this in both ways. As we go and we try to teach anybody in the world, if you're a hypocrite and you're trying to evangelize people, please stop. Just stop. You need to go back and you need to change. Then second off, whenever you go through and you try to talk to anybody, whether it's someone in a denomination or whether it's somebody that's not going to church services at all, agnostic, atheist, whatever, don't come across as a judgmental person. And that's the whole point behind this as well, is that you have to realize there's you had an issue. You had a blind spot. And you have to come and approach people in that through that lens. But none of that, though, undoes the fact that there's a standard. There is a standard that everybody has to come to. And so that's what Jesus is trying to get across. He's already laid down the standard, but he's showing what happens sometimes, a lot of times, is we try to whittle down the standard to make it easier on ourselves, or we misapply the standard. We'll make it really harsh on somebody else, and then it's really lax on us. And that's not how God operates. It's the same standard for everybody. So what else do we want to say about this section? Go ahead. Sure. Yeah. And that's where we're yeah, so that's one of the things we mentioned a little bit on Wednesday is, you know, this judge not, condemn not, forgive. Like, this is the whole kind of backstory, loving your enemies. And then just like you're saying, Joel, that's where he goes to. Is he doesn't say just there's no judgments. Hey, it all is relative. It's actually quite different. He says you can know. You can know absolutely the condition of people's hearts by the type of life that they live. And that just kind of transcends the hypocrisy thing, is that people can see it, whether it's you or in other people. Go ahead. Right, right. And again, and the whole point is, like Jesus said in that account, don't neglect one to the detriment of the other. Do them both. But the whole point is get the priorities straight to drive to the other one. And but you're absolutely right, Austin. Let's keep going, and let's look now at 43 down through 45. And let's look at, we've already read this section, so let's look at the contrast here that he brings up. So let's just answer a couple of the questions to help kind of prime us a little bit. Are figs gathered from thorn bushes? If you don't know anything about that, you can come over to my house. I've got a fig plant. I've got thorn bushes. So I can show you. And are grapes gathered from a bramble bush? Well, we know that, right? And if you need physical evidence, I can give you some examples of that. Okay, so what's his point then? What's the point of the illustration? Yeah, you can't hide who you are. Which, that's already an uncomfortable thought. So, what then do we... What is Jesus expecting us to do then? Okay. Go ahead. Sure. So what other passages come to mind about the importance of the heart, maybe from the Old Testament, when you think about this text? Sure, sure. Proverbs 4:23, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it. Yeah, so what's interesting is, if you understand that lens, what then were the, what does it seem the Pharisees were emphasizing and focusing on that they should have, as opposed to what they should have been focusing on?
They're focusing on the fruit that they were bearing and what other people were doing as well. Instead of saying, if you focus on the heart, fruit
And your point is very true. It was the outward. Did you wash your hands this time? Did you give or whatever the picture was? Did you tithe the mint, anise, and cumin? Not again to say that those things were insignificant, but the heart behind that is where the battle was won. It's not won in the tithing. It's not won in the washing of the hands. It's in the submission of the will to Jesus and giving that. Go ahead. It's true. It's true.
And it seems to me that this is almost, there's some application here. I haven't thought this through greatly, but, you know, we all have a lot of self-doubts about whether we're good enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way we are. I don't know if it comes from our teaching or what, but this is almost, to some extent, saying, well, look at what you produce.
Sure. And I think that's what Jesus does as well, is he goes to those situations and he's showing, like if it's the washing of hands, he violates that in order to show a point that there was something wrong with the heart.
So that's a technicality. That's
well, and that was a tradition there.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Sure.
They thought they were producing good fruit, but that's not a good fruit.
Right.
You know, the things that really matter and important were important, they weren't good.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead. Right, and what the devil tries to do is the devil tries to say there is no standard. The devil tries to go through and say you can get something different than what you've sown, right? He tries to violate the sowing and reaping. He tries to violate the fruit bearing because that's part of the issue of hypocrisy and self-deception. Is I go through and I lie and I cheat and I have anger problems and all these different, you know, I'm cheating on my spouse, but hey, I'm a good person. I'm righteous. I'm okay. And the whole point that Jesus is saying is no, you're not. No, you're not. Your heart's not right. And just like Tom's pointing out, if those are in your life and you don't realize there's a heart problem, then you've got to go back and recorrect. You've got to realize there is a heart problem. There is something there. And, you know, and what can happen in those situations is going to be two reactions. Either you're going to go through and say, we were preparing for Jude's class today, and when he's confronted about his sin, he could have said, hey, Nathan, you're totally wrong. Or he could have said, hey, I've sinned. That's the two options when you're kind of pressed to it. But that's for our benefit. The other way would be self-deception. So as we look at these types of pictures, he's going to bring this up a little bit later, but it's about going through and getting our heart right so that we bear good fruit. And then, like Tom has pointed out, if our fruit isn't right, then we have to realize there is a heart issue, and we've got to go back and address that. So let's talk about this last section here in 46 down through 49. It's a little bit different than the account at the end of Matthew. But what do you think is his point? Yeah, and that's where the difficulty comes. It's easy to go through and understand the shallow things. Maybe it's just, hey, sometimes it's easy just to acknowledge things are true instead of actually live like things are true, right? And someone could have gone through and listened to all of Jesus had said and say, hey, you know what? You're right, Jesus. But that's not what Jesus is wanting. What he wants is people to listen and say, you know, you're right, and then dig deep. Go through and flesh it all out, live out the life that he's talking about. This isn't just suggestions. And one of the reasons that I think it's so important to look at verses within context is maybe you had listened to a Bible study or you've heard a sermon and you've seen Luke 6:46, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Okay, well, is that a point that we could go through and say to our religious friends? Yeah. He was talking to people that were already pretty religious here that needed to actually do what Jesus had said. And it's within the context of making sure your heart's right and making sure you love your enemy and all of those types of things. Now, is this about making sure that, you know, if you're not following the organization or the church, that you correct it? Yeah. Is it about making sure you follow baptism? Yeah. But let's keep it within its context. We're taking a principle from Luke 6 and applying it. But let's see what it's saying here. It's about people that have deceived themselves, that are saying, Lord, Lord, and they're not doing it. And so we have to be really, really careful about that. So what else do we want to say about the Sermon on the Plain or this section before we move on? Go ahead. Right. I'm really glad you brought that up, because this whole point is about making sure you have disciples that are going to stay and to be dedicated through the difficulties and the struggles, and that's really good. It comes down to our effort. Because you can't substitute effort, can you? You know, I can go through and I could teach you the truth on something, and we might be able to come to the agreement on something, but who ultimately determines the effort that's put into something? It's individual. I can't do anything. I can't do it for you. You can't do it for me. You have to dig deep within yourself. I have to dig deep within myself. And we can't just say, hey, because I go to the right church and because we all sing, we don't use, you know, instruments or whatever, and say, hey, because I'm there, I'm doing it right. Well, there could be something part of that, but you can go there and not be applying the actual lessons and teaching that's part of it. You can't just deceive yourselves. And so we have to make sure we're putting the effort in all the way through and making sure we're handling it and being sincere throughout it all. Other questions, comments on this section? It's not surprising that we slow down on Jesus' teaching here. So well, let's move into chapter 7. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So let's look at chapter 7. And let's talk about the healing of the centurion's servant. The healing of the centurion's servant. So let's at least get through this first section this morning. Let's read here verses 1 through 10. Okay, so I've been mentioning we need to make sure we follow the narrative flow. These stories, I don't believe, are just kind of haphazardly thrown in there. So right after this whole discussion about sincere faith and genuineness and doing what the Lord has said, we now have one of the most inflammatory sections within Luke's gospel for if a Jew was reading it. So what's kind of the summary? How would you summarize this story? What happens?
Faith and action.
Okay. Faith and action. Right.
And I have that faith in you.
Yeah, this is a, I've done a sermon on this. This is a guy that understands authority, right? So we, you know, maybe you haven't heard enough of my discussions on authority or something, but this is authority. He said it, do it. Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about that. So he was a Roman, but there's some really interesting things about him being a Roman. So what is his attitude, though? What has he done? Okay, he's humbled himself.
His rank and station in his occupation as a centurion, a soldier in the Roman realm, as it was a the authority over that region.
Right.
They held him at bay pretty much.
Yeah, and he's a centurion, so he has at least 100 people under him. That's kind of what the designation is. So he has 100 people that, like he says, I say it and they do it. There's none of this kind of whining and moaning and complaining and just kind of dragging themselves along. No, it's they go, and they immediately come back, and they've done exactly what he said. And he's understanding just some physical, earthly illustrations that I've been given power and authority, and when I say it, it gets done. So what then is his application about Jesus? Right, right. So, I mean, yeah, it could be him casting out the demons and the way the demons listened to him. It's the way the disease left immediately. All of that is showing power and authority much more than what he has. Go ahead. Yeah, right from the beginning, Simeon's prophecy, the light to the Gentiles, and you have a critique about Israel throughout this and how they're willing to listen to Jesus and about the man's faith. Go ahead.
Verse 4 is interesting in that those who came to Peter seemed to think that the man, or to Jesus, seemed to think the man should be healed because he was worthy, as though he had earned.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and then Jesus says something about his faith throughout that, which, again, all of this is about the man's faith, even though he doesn't say anything necessarily about, hey, I believe, but he's showing the results of belief. The belief is trusting in authority for it to happen. So there's all kinds of little nuances that go into this, you know, I think are interesting. For example, in Luke 1, you remember one of the prophecies was about how Jesus was going to and lift up the humble. Here's a man that's very, very humble. By comparison, though, to many other positions, this would be a guy you think, hey, he's got the star, right? He's got the military prowess. He's got all of that taken care of. He's got the power and authority, and that's not his attitude at all. So he's very, very different within this. And so you have this concept of of his extraordinary faith, of this mission. Let's talk about that for a moment. It's not a mission to the Gentiles, though, right? Does Jesus go to him to ask, hey, let me heal your son or heal your servant?
No.
What does he do? Yeah, so this was actually a Gentile appealing to Jesus, which was different. Remember, he was only for the lost sheep of the household of Israel. He's going to send them out for the nations. But again, this is kind of foreshadowing and some of that element that's going to be coming later. There's so many different little things. One, you can see his generosity, right? What did he do for the nation? Yeah, I mean, that's no small expense. I mean, we might say he built a church building for him, right?
It,
right. Right.
Well,
right.
Their assessment of him, Jesus' assessment of him, he loved the nation. You know, what does the nation stand for?
Right.
They are worshipers of God. So they said he loved the nation because evidently he had been giving some credence to what they believed.
Right. And at some point, they had been that holy nation, right? The light to the Gentile, the light to the other nations. Now, I'm supposed to be out of time, but I've got like a minute. So I want to say one thing about this text, though. This is actually one of the texts that people use to discredit the Bible. It's kind of a surprising thing, but the way that they do it is they compare it to Matthew chapter 8, and they say that there's a contradiction. In Matthew chapter 8, it says that the centurion came to Jesus and asked that he would heal his servant. And in this, does a centurion do that?
No, but he did the same thing.
So, two ways, first off, just understand contradictions, how people levy against the Bible is they say there's contradictions. First off, supplementation is not contradiction. So keep that in mind. Supplementation is not contradiction. The second thing about this is, one, he could be going through and saying he sent the elders of the Jews, then he sent his friends, then he came himself. That is possible within the text. The other thing is, when someone does something through another person, it's attributed to the person. For example, when Pilate is said to have scourged Jesus, was he over there grabbing the whip and hitting Jesus? But he was doing it through the agency of someone. So the reason I bring that up is a lot of people want to try to discredit the Bible, and this is the kind of things that they appeal to, brethren. It's things that if you look at and you approach them reasonably, you can see that this is pretty simple to understand, and this is the kind of thing we have to be aware of when someone goes through and says, hey, the Bible's full of contradictions. Let's look at it. What does it actually say? So, all right, let's stop right there. I took over this time. So, all right, we'll stop right there.